Hello, I'm Sophie Jackson, Associate Publisher of Treasury Today Asia, and I'd like to welcome you to Treasury Today Asia and Cities podcast, Understanding the Engines of Growth, China and India. Following on from Treasury Today Asia's pioneering series of China and India-focused insight articles with Citi, this short podcast is designed to give an additional perspective on the two countries. Together with Amol Gupta, Asia Head of Treasury and Trade Solutions at Citibank, we cut through the reams of coverage and hype to present a long-term view of the realistic potential of China and India for corporates. Amol has over 25 years' experience at Citi and drives the direction and development of their treasury and trade solutions in APAC. He is responsible for meeting the needs of corporate clients across the region and helping emerging markets clients go global. One of the leading experts on this subject, he's a great person to give us a unique view of these powerhouses. We began our conversation by asking Amol to share his views on the pace of renminbi internationalization.
In one word, I'd say it's just been hectic. And I know we're going through a period of extreme volatility now and probably some reverse measures on the extent of internationalization. But if you just step back and see what's happened in the last 2.5 years, we've gone from absolutely no internationalization to significant internationalization, significant availability and the use of the renminbi offshore outside of China, significant ability for corporates and financial institutions to move money out reasonably freely, though within a certain set of rules. If you think about internationalization of the renminbi, I think about it in three different chapters, if you will. The first is just making the renminbi a trade currency. I would say that that box is checked. You know, about a quarter of China's imports plus exports are today denominated in the renminbi. The next one after that is capital convertibility. And I'd say on the capital convertibility, it's very early stages. And there we've seen, you know, some start-stop measures. And I hope we see in the longer term continued opening up in capital convertibility, just making it easier for treasurers to take money in and out of China. The third phase is the whole reserve currency. And, you know, it does get a lot of headlines. The whole SDR basket of the IMF, potentially 2016 event later this year. But I think that's just off the starting blocks.
Thanks, Amol. So, what does China need to do to ensure the renminbi becomes a truly international currency?
So I think today, Sophie, if you think about it, China is already an incredibly important global economy. You know, it accounts for 15% of global GDP, 10% of global trade. And those numbers are going to just continue to increase. So the relevance of China is directly related to the relevance of the renminbi, and it's already very relevant. And so, in my view, making that currency easy to use is, in a simple sentence, what the Chinese government should focus on. And easy to use sounds like a very simple statement, but you can break it down into many underlying elements. Easy to use means building confidence in the currency, being able to take it in, being able to take it out, being able to create an environment where people feel comfortable operating in is what I think is most important. Allowing for more capital convertibility, allowing for deeper offshore markets, where the renminbi can be invested in creating asset classes offshore for the renminbi to be, you know, as you create pools of renminbi outside of China, you want to find ways to use those pools of renminbi. So creating a deep offshore bond market, these are all the ingredients necessary to make the renminbi a truly international currency. I mean, it is international, but a truly international is different.
What would your advice be to treasurers looking to incorporate China into their regional or global structures?
China will continue to be big for our clients, irrespective of what happens and what is allowed or not allowed in terms of the renminbi and the internationalization, the pure domestic China market as well, not just as a manufacturing base for exports, but just for pure domestic consumption, is just massive for many of our clients. They need a good trusted partner. They need a bank that understands the regulations. The regulations aren't simple to understand. They're sometimes very bespoke. They're different by different provinces, different regions. So having a partner that understands that and can bring to bear access to the market, to the regulators, and access structures and solutions that leverage change is a key ingredient, I'd say, for our corporate clients. And I'd summarize, Sophie, by saying there's three things I'd advise corporate treasurers. Take the leap of faith and start testing the renminbi as a trade and a settlement currency if you aren't already doing it. You will have, I am sure, pieces of your supply chain that are already using the renminbi. You will find that it will become a natural hedge for you because of obligations you have either on the buy side or the sell side where you are sitting with renminbi. So, you know, think about whether you want to start settling, whether you want to start invoicing some bits in the renminbi. Then have in place an effective risk management and a control infrastructure because the currency has its complications, you know, is not straight through in the way it gets processed, has different cutoff times when you're operating from outside of China. And then I'd say what I said in the beginning, which is leverage a good banking partner to help you navigate through the complications of having two different currencies that are actually one, and issues that arise when you're dealing across borders of moving money in and out of China.
Okay, in our quick trip across Asia, can we now turn to India? Major changes are happening in India. How do you see the country's economic prospects?
So, Sophie, I'd say at a high level, lots of opportunity when it comes to India. India has been through some fair amount of balance sheet correction. They've had a risk-reducing fiscal deficit. They've had low commodity prices, especially oil, helping reduce inflation, because otherwise India was always dealing with high inflation. They've got robust domestic consumption, and you know, add it all together, you've got a whole new government, you've got an optimistic environment, you've got, you know, you've got a mood that is thinking about change in a positive way. So I think there's lots of opportunities for our clients. Indian businesses are very evolved in almost every industry. They have world-class efficiencies in those industries. And hence, we feel very positive about the fact that our clients have lots of growth opportunities in their respective industries in India. Beyond that high level, when you break it down, there's lots of structural change that's going on in India. The government has made it easier for companies to invest in India. Foreign direct investment and ease of doing business is an agenda that's at the top of the house. On a recent visit, I've had interactions and I've had conversations with people where, you know, they're all measuring where India stacks in the ease of doing business. And, you know, frankly, when you're not so easy to do business, the initial improvement is not very challenging if they get a few things right. They've also made improvements and changes in the extent of foreign investment allowed in certain industries like telecom, insurance, just to name a few. The whole Make in India campaign is a massive one. They want to create 100 million jobs out of Make in India. They want to make manufacturing from 10% to 25% of the GDP. So these are all, you know, measurable targets that it's great to see a country like India have. You know, you've got the whole goods and services tax initiative, which, you know, if they can simplify the collection of toll effectively at every movement of goods at every state to a standard tax across the country, these are all really game changers in India. So I just think that the potential for our clients to leverage all this change and the simplification of doing business in India for a very large audience that is, you know, slowly rising up the income curve on the back of a country that's already high on domestic consumption, but potentially much more to go because the savings rate in India is in the 32-33% range. I think the potential for our clients is just fantastic.
What does India need to do in order to reach its full potential?
India has been a promise for the last many decades. Has it delivered? Yeah, you could probably say it has delivered. I mean, you know, its GDP has grown significantly, rapidly, steadily, in a non-volatile way. But if you really take a lot of the hurdles out, India could grow significantly faster. And what are those hurdles? Corruption is one. The inability to get things moving faster in India because of the political construct, you know, even getting the goods and services tax bill through parliament is a tall order. You know, nobody knows whether it's going to happen. If it doesn't happen this year, you've got elections coming. So, you know, all these are things that hold India back. And if these things didn't hold India back, I'd say it would easily add another 100 basis points to India's GDP.
Thank you for that, Amol. As the business potential in India grows, what steps do you think treasurers can take now and in the next few years to maximise their treasury efficiency and ensure they're well-placed to help their companies reach their full potential?
To stay ahead of the game in India, you have to pay close attention to and learn how to leverage the digital agenda, which I just think is infectious in the way it's growing in India. There is significant changes on the payment infrastructure. When you think about it, 5 years back, you know, this country was all paper, it was all checks, it's all electronic. And not only is it electronic, you know, you've got institutions like NPCI that have been set up recently. You've got faster payments. You've got mobile-based payments. And, you know, combine the infrastructure change with the technology available. And I think it's both constructive as well as disruptive change that RTSA treasurers need to adapt to.
What do you think the next steps are that India must take to maintain its forward momentum?
I touched on some of the stuff that's happening, which is opening up of the investment limits, making FDI easy, goods and services tax. Making all of these happen is the most important next step in my view. Sometimes India remains a promise. And what I'd love to see is that a lot of these things actually happen and they actually translate. And all of this adds up to really making India easy to do business in. And if India can crack making easy to do business in, which has lots of other elements that we spoke about, you know, it goes beyond just the four or five things I mentioned. It's, you know, reducing corruption. It's, you know, resolving insolvency. It's enforcing contracts and a whole slew of other things. I think the potential for India to grow is just enormous. So there's another thing, Sophie, I'd like to see coming out of India is on the internationalization side. And not a lot gets talked about there, but, you know, I'd love to see more internationalization of the rupee, even if it is in select segments like the export segment. In being able to move money more easily overseas, given how international Indian companies have got in the last 5 years, that would be just a welcome change to see from India.
I'm Sophie Jackson, and that was me talking to Amol Gupta, the Asia Head for Treasury and Trade Solutions at Citibank. For more insight into China and India and the opportunities that exist for corporates across the region, you can visit our website, treasurytodayasia.com, or sign up for our weekly Insights newsletter. Thank you to Amol for being our guest, and thank you for listening.